Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Did you know that the last time Manchester City lost 4 games in a row, the Blue Moon Podcast didn't even exist? It's 18 years ago, back when Stuart Pearce was the manager, and it was the preview of what would turn out to be one of the worst seasons to follow the club. How does the song go? City are back, hello, hello. We know the drill though, the players are all injured, those that aren't injured have been run into the ground, and that's all happening at the same time as they're trying to work out a way to plug the Rodri-shaped hole in the middle. With all of that in mind, second in the table and 5 points off the leaders might not be the worst position in the world. But also, with all that in mind, how does this run of form change after the international break? Because it will have to. We'll discuss the fallout from the game at Brighton on today's Blue Moon Podcast. Plus, we'll hear from the Athletic's Noticer-in-Chief, John McKenzie. He's been examining this autumn blip of City's, comparing it to previous autumn blips of the clubs as well. And without wishing to make this podcast all about me, it was my birthday this week, and once again, it's been ruined by City. So I've sought comfort from some of our regulars for times when City have spoilt the party for them as well. All that to come, so who is revelling in the misery with me this week? From statcity.co.uk, we've got Adam Carter.
Hello.
And we're also joined by City fan Joe Butterfield.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Joe, you good?
Very good, yeah. Yeah, it's not all about you, because it's my birthday soon as well.
Well,
so
we're going to come to this, because it was Adam's birthday this week as well, wasn't it?
It's all about us.
Yeah. Did you have a good birthday, Adam?
Well, it wasn't until Brighton came into town. Or we went to Brighton, as it was.
Yeah. Just on all of this, because the other thing that's been happening this week is everyone's been moving from Twitter to Blue Sky, and it got me thinking about changes at City for this bit of the show. Moving from Main Road, changing to Laser Blue for a bit, all those sorts of things. A couple of new badges in our lifetime. What's something that doesn't really matter that you miss from the old days?
First thing that sprung to mind was the change from season cards or season books to digital season.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I really miss... My top drawer in my bedroom is just full of my old season books and season cards.
What number is it this week?
Exactly. That was like winning the lottery when you found your number in your book. So
do you remember that... Do you remember the year? It was a couple of years, I think, they did it back to back where you could design your own season card. And I don't know why. I mean, it's probably there's probably plenty of reasons why they got rid of that in the end. But I mean, I love that, mate. I think I'm gutted they got rid of that.
Yeah.
And cards in general, yeah. It's just what happens to physical stuff? Let me say, funnily enough, as we came in here, we noticed that Mooney's cupboard is full of physical media, because he's scared of the digital world leaving him behind, which we're talking about right now.
I am. It is a scary prospect. So don't you knock it. Joe, what have you missed? Adam's got his good old season ticket book. What are you missing?
I think I'm just missing Eliakim Mangala, you know. I think he doesn't really matter, does he? But like, you know, he wasn't integral to anything while he was here, but it was great fun having him around, wasn't it? Just, you know, that 5 games a season under Pep where he was just, you know, he was a bit of a... You watch him on try and pass a ball and just marvel at it. Pal Prem, not suited.
Yeah, definitely not. Right, deep breath. Firstly, are you okay? It feels very strange indeed sitting here without a win in 4 games, and I imagine that you might have been feeling a lot like I have. Shaken, troubled, let down, full of questions, Adam, yes?
I'm still in denial.
Yeah, so we're going to come to it now. It's the it's the run of form, really, that City are in. We're going to start kind of... Joe, they're on the wrong end of the wrong kind of 4 in a row right now. The song goes, we never win at home, we never win away. We didn't mean it, surely.
No, and yet here we are. It's each individual game, I've been able to justify them in their own different ways, one after the other. But as it comes to, you know, a point where you have four one in a row, which is really annoying because we've been bragging about four in a row for a long time now, and it's really painful that it's now coming to be a bit of a taboo thing that I don't really want to talk about. Yeah, like obviously the Spurs game, we didn't even really want to progress. Like that's one where
they weren't trying to lose, but it's not the worst thing in the world.
It was like if we go out, who cares? But Pep ultimately didn't go weak enough, which meant that when it came to Bournemouth, we had too many tired legs, so we lost there. Sporting was a bit of a freak game where I actually think that I listened to you talk to Sam Lee on Let Me Talk About It.
Weren't they for a long time?
They were so good for so much of that game, and honestly, it was like, what, two counter-attacks and a couple of penalties, and that was it. They've won 4-1. On another day, that could be a City win. And then Brighton was pretty much a repeat of that, wasn't it? Mm. Where it was the legs had gone. I think whereas you could say that City had a truly dominant 45 minutes against Sporting, they probably had a truly dominant like 30, 35 minutes against Brighton. And yeah, it felt like just a bridge too far at that point. And once they scored that first goal, everybody, you know, I knew it, the fans knew it, and it felt like the players knew it as well, that was going to be a 2-1. So yeah, it's individually, you can sort of look at them all and go, this is the reasons why they were losses. But at the end of the day, if it's four defeats in a row, no matter when it is, whether it's Stuart Pearce or Pep Guardiola, you don't really feel too good about it, do you? So
no,
it's not great.
Adam, can you get too head-lossy about it if, you know, we all saw it coming in the running? Like literally everybody I was talking to in the run-up to that Brighton game was going, you know what, we're going to get beaten at the weekend. We're just going to lose the game. And then they lost the game and everyone went, well, I can't believe we've lost this one.
So I've got a reason for that. And that's because we went into half-time 1-0 up. Yeah. And I thought, oh, have we turned the corner already? Because I was absolutely resigned to the fact it's a tricky place to go. We're not in good form, as everyone was talking about before the game. Then we go 1-0 up and we're not absolutely under the cosh. We were barnstorming, but we've done enough. We've got a mismatch of a back four at that point and it wasn't really under too much pressure. So I thought, oh, we might have been prematurely wrote them off. Then the second half happened. And so the head loss came. I'd got rid of the head loss for the first half, came flooding back in the second half. And that's why I think there was a bit of shock, because actually we did okay in the first half and I thought we'd turned a corner, albeit a 45-minute corner.
Yeah.
Does it feel like it could be a bit, for me, a little bit of the head loss from my point of view was brought on by the fact that I had seen it coming? Like, I think the fact that you know, you've, I knew it, it's like, this is it. It's like, oh god, I was right. This is the last thing I wanted. I think when it kind of comes to the bit of the season as a whole, the whole season has felt a bit like you know, the Simpsons where the pig's rolling down the hill. It's a bit like, oh, it's just a little airborne. It's still good. And it turns out that actually, we've been just sort of in denial, haven't we? We've seen the performances and we've all been like, well, we'll be getting points. It's still good.
Let it go, Dad.
And here we are, where it's just finally Bart Simpson is saying it's gone.
It does. I mean, in fairness, Adam, it does serve as a handy reminder that, like, the last four seasons, winning four titles in a row hasn't been easy. As much as anybody wants to, like, from the outside world, if they want to say, City spent the most money, they've got the best players, of course it's been easy for them. Just hasn't, has it?
Well, this now makes other people need to choose which one is it. Is it the money or is it the good luck, the fortune, the manager, the players, everything? Like, so I think it just shows how the opposite of inevitable it's been.
Inevitable,
because people just think we're going to barnstorm to another title, another 10 titles, and football's over and we've ruined everything. We're looking at four defeats in a row and, you know, is everything fine again now, apart from our side of the town? So, I just think it really, really hits home how much of an achievement we've done. And Pep said that after the game. He said, maybe we'll take stock of what we've actually achieved when we're playing against the Brightons, the Bournemouths. And he's absolutely spot on. I think it just highlights how difficult it's been, and we still won't get the flowers for it, but I think we know it's a perfect time to take stock of where we're actually at.
You say they won't get the flowers for it. If they win it this season, Joe, it's a long way to go, but if they come back from this and win it this season, has this run of form been so bad that people will have to go, okay, well, you know, fair enough. They had to overcome problems this season. It wasn't inevitable.
Well, I hope so, because I've been seeing a lot of stats about how Fergie never lost four in a row over the last week or so. So I think if he's never done it, and which means surely that if Fergie didn't win a title having lost four in a row, then surely that means that no one's won a title having lost four in a row in a season. Like, I can't imagine that's a thing that anyone's done. So if City do that, and stuff. But then you can just see it being the narrative being that if we lose four in a row and still win the title, which I'm not at all suggesting will happen, I think this is probably the year that we just don't win it. But I think if it does happen, I think the narrative will probably be, I mean, look at Arsenal's form while we've been doing this. Like any other team, you know, if this was Klopp's Liverpool, they'd have capitalised on that. Yeah. Look at, I mean, Slot's Liverpool are capitalising on that. It will probably feel more like a season where Arsenal have let it slip or Liverpool have let it slip if we lose four in a row and still win, rather than something where everyone will go, wow, City are pretty good, aren't they? But I think I do still suspect that the inevitability, I did massive air quotes there for anyone who can't see me. Anyone who's not in this room, yeah. For the inevitability factor will no doubt creep in at the end of the season if it happens.
Well, no team's lost the title from Liverpool's position having this much lead at this stage of a season.
Really?
In the Premier League.
It doesn't feel like they've got a massive
lead
right now.
It's happened five times and all five have gone on to win it.
Oh, fair play. So if they do, but then they are just massive bottle jobs. It's not City being
good. Let's put the pressure on someone else
for once. That's the one. That's the way. That's
the agenda. That's the narrative now I'm going with.
Excellent. Right. Well, we've kind of alluded to it already, but Adam and Joe are in my front room. We're doing this one in person, which maybe means that you think that I couldn't do this.
It's a quiz about the period the last time City lost four games in a row.
You thought just because I didn't have my little soundboard on the internet that I couldn't do that, but I can.
Furious.
Should see the look on Adam's face right now. I'm going to let him stew for a bit. Joe, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first. I'll let him stew a little bit.
Okay, numbers 1 to 6. You know the drill by now. Pick a number.
Numero uno, please.
Number one. Who scored City's last winning goal during a 1-0 victory at Aston Villa before they embarked on their last run of four defeats in a row?
2006. I don't even know. I don't even know if he was still there. John Macken.
It wasn't John Macken, no. It was Darius Vassell. Aston Villa it was. Yeah, there we go. Swing and a miss. Adam, over to you.
Two.
Number two. What was the name of the good luck charm that joined Stuart Pearce in his technical area for several games, beginning with a 2-0 win over West Ham in September 2006?
Was it called Beanie?
It was called Beanie. Beanie the horse. 1-0. Okay, Joe, over to you.
Get it back.
Three.
Question number three. Okay, Caleb Folan scored the winner for which Premier League side at Eastlands in March 2007, having previously scored for Chesterfield earlier that season as they knocked City out of the League Cup?
Oh my God. I was going to guess a random team here.
You got one in 19 shot from the 2006-07 season.
Yeah, let's go Bolton.
No, you should have trusted your instincts because it's the team that always, always, always do City over.
Wigan
Athletic, yes it was. Okay, swing and a miss there as well. Adam, you can win it here. 4, 5 or 6?
6.
Number 6. Okay, who were the first team City beat after their last run of four defeats in a row, courtesy of a Joey Barton penalty?
Whatever happened to Joey Barton?
Yeah, what did happen? You'd think he'd have a podcast or something.
It's definitely on Blue Sky. I want to say Charlton or Newcastle. I'll go...
Which one?
Charlton.
All right. It's not Charlton. It's not Newcastle either. Doesn't matter. It's Arsenal. There we go. Swing and a miss. Wow. Okay, Joe, you need this one. You got 4 or 6?
Let's go 4.
Question number 4. Okay, what was the full-time score of the game that ended City's last run of four defeats in a row? A home draw with Portsmouth that saw Ben Thatcher sent off. No, it didn't see him sent off. That's a bad question. Saw him assault Pedro Mendes.
2-2.
It wasn't 2-2, it was 0-0.
Oh, fantastic.
Good old nil-all draw. So, Adam, you are the winner. But
By default.
But for the sake of completionism, question number 5. Which player was sent off in a 3-0 opening day defeat to Chelsea, the final defeat in the previous run of 4 in a row?
Was it Darbo or Corrade?
Was it?
Corrade.
That's the question. It was Bernardo Corrade. Yeah. Ousmane Darbo was sent off at Reading a few weeks later. I was there for that one.
Tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I even used your website to come up with a tie-break question.
See, that's why I panic when you throw a quiz at me, because I've got a brand to protect. And believe it or not, I am a geek and I am very sad, but I don't sit scrolling my own website all day. But now, every time I come round here now, I'm gonna have to.
Excellent. Do you want to hear the tiebreak? Just because I've used your website to
do
it.
Yeah, go on.
Okay, since their last run of four defeats in a row, how many games in all competitions, including the Community Shield, but not including penalty shootouts, have City won?
Oh, my God.
You're not supposed to know the answer. You've got to have a guess, haven't you? 150?
I'm going to say, like, 304.
Miles out the barrier, 634. Jeez, there you go. Excellent.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
This is why you always tell people when you're going to do quizzes.
Yeah, every time. And then my brain just deserts me.
Excellent. There we go. So congratulations, Adam. You are the winner of the impromptu quiz. I'm going to let you have a little bit of a sit down and a break now, because we've seen the meme a few times now that City are written off during the blip in the autumn. And then after they've won the title in May, everyone has forgotten it and decided that it's boring and an inevitable outcome. I'm very wary of believing that because something's happened before, it will happen again. To get a handle on exactly what issues City are facing tactically this year, I've been speaking to The Athletic's John McKenzie.
It's remarkable, really, because a lot of the things that we're seeing just seem very on Pep Guardiola like from City. They're sort of compounded with that game against Brighton. But I suppose to go back to the very beginning, the issues that I've been seeing have been issues of being able to counter press well, particularly in the last couple of seasons. All of that stems back to what is it that Pep Guardiola wants Man City to be doing, and we all know that it's, you know, high possession stuff. We all know that he tries to force the opponents back into their own box, squeeze them into their own third, and give them very few chances to actually get the ball out. And so, as a result, what may sound like a very sort of attacking, proactive approach is actually quite a conservative one in terms of the out possession stuff as well, because the idea is the more we have the ball, the less we'll have to defend. So it's almost like defending with possession, making sure we have the ball, making the spaces that we're attacking smaller and the spaces we're defending bigger, which seems like the complete opposite thing to do, and most managers will try and do the opposite, try and make the spaces they're attacking bigger and the spaces they're defending smaller. But with the upside of, well, we'll be able to possess the ball super well, we'll have, you know, 60-70% possession, and then we'll set ourselves up to be able to defend those big spaces behind us. But all of that hangs on the ability to be able to counter press well when you lose the ball, because if you lose the ball and the opponents can get into those spaces quite comfortably, then you're inviting trouble in many respects. Now, obviously, the way that City have built their team is to fill the back lines with players who can defend those moments, but you still want to reduce them as much as possible. And I think that's what we've started seeing more recently, is that City are less able to actually functionally counter-press, and so it means that teams are able to cause more problems for them in those counter-attacking moments. I guess we could talk a little bit as well about whether or not in defending those counter-attacking moments, City are slightly worse off as well. But the result is that at the moment, City look very fragile in an area where previously they haven't looked particularly fragile. And there isn't really a situation so far this season where it seems as though Pep Guardiola has found a solution to that problem.
Yeah, I think back to last season, and I remember Rob Edwards, after Luton came to the Etihad, saying one of the reasons that it was such a hard game to play was that the moments you do win the ball and the moments you do have possession, then you look up and there's nowhere to go forward because City are not giving you any options forward. And I saw you tweet a screenshot of the second half of the Brighton game at the weekend, where that effectively showed how many options Brighton players had in possession with City having a high line. And we all know the old adage is, if you play in a high line, you've got to get possession or you've got to get pressure on that ball. How much of the problems here can you put down to injuries and fatigue? Because City have been talking about, you know, having lots of players out injured. They've having players that are playing more than they would want them to be. Is it a case of when they can rotate, they can get they maybe don't lose the legs and they don't have the issues getting, you know, on the players in possession? Or is there something a bit deeper than that?
I think, I mean, a lot of this will be me just speculating. The biggest impact factor for me is, I think, just the squad aging out a little bit. So I think if you look back to previous seasons, these ideas were already there. So last season, for example, Opta has this metric called fast breaks, which is basically you lose the ball in the opponent's half, they attack and they create a shot from it. That constitutes a fast break. Last season, City conceded 8 of those fast breaks, which is quite a lot, because in the previous 5 seasons before that, they only conceded 9 in total across all those 5 seasons. So there was already something happening at the beginning across the course of last season, which is now being exacerbated further. Obviously, the injury to Rodri is one of those things. But I think the squad age profile as well is, it's the same problems, but with a year added on to all of those players. And as a result, it means that, you know, if we look at the midfield that we're playing against Brighton, you've got Kovacic, who, is not a large space defender anyway. And then you have Phil Foden on one side and Gundogan on the other, right? And Gundogan, who was brought in to replace Gundogan, which I suppose indicates maybe some of the issues that City have had in squad building in recent years. So I think what's really missing is the mobility and energy to be able to engage in those counter-pressing moments. And obviously, as I said at the beginning, a lot of this comes down to the fact that, you know, you're trying to defend with the ball as well, right? So if the in possession side of things is slightly off it, then you're exacerbating the fact that you're then going to have to do more of these counter press moments. You're going to have to face more of these counter attacks, and it becomes a bit of a vicious circle in that sense as well. But for me, yeah, I would say definitely the biggest problem right now is just, I would say, squad profiles and certain players aging out the squad. We know that Gundogan can play in this team because we've seen him doing it, but I just don't think that he's at the same kind of physical level that he was at previously, to a point that it's become a bit of a problem. I guess last season you add in certain profiles like Jeremy Doku for someone like Jack Grealish, who had, again, very different profiles of players, right? Doku's a high volume dribbler who's going to try creative things, and that means he often loses the ball, whereas Jack Grealish is a high possession player who's going to keep the ball a lot, and the only time he ever gives it away is when he gets fouled. And those sorts of things play into it as well. And then, I guess on top of that, losing Rodri then just means that everything gets pushed back a layer, because everyone then almost feels like they have to step back a level on the pitch. And the problems have just sort of snowballed from there, I would say.
Yeah, the Rodri one is interesting, because it's certainly been a problem for Guardiola to have to solve this season. Are we seeing this run of form coming because there's a combination of things happening here? You know, they've played Bournemouth and Brighton in the league, who are, you know, they're not top level teams, but they're some of the worst opponents you can have to go away to when you're struggling with out of possession problems. And then at the same time, they haven't got a squad that's fit enough to go through 90 minutes right now. So trying to solve these problems alongside having all the other problems, it kind of makes it a bit unmanageable.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. And the Rodri thing is just an exacerbator of like previous problems, as I've said. Like it was bad last season, even with Rodri. Now without him, it's becoming, you know, so much of a problem that City is struggling to win games. I mean, losing those 4 games in a row is just unheard of in Pep's career, right? So I guess for me that's what it comes down to. I would say that it's kind of hard to judge where City are at, because, for example, in the Brighton game, I think for the first 35 minutes, City just comfortably on top. They're just doing their thing. They're playing high up the pitch. They're you know, controlling space with and without the ball, and there's no problems whatsoever. They get the goal. They could easily have been 3-0 up after the first half, and then it becomes quite passive, and it becomes, let's not commit our players too far forward, and that's where the problems start arising. And if you look at an XG plot for the game, you'll see City jumping right up 35 minutes to around 2 XG, and then sort of flatlining. And then in the second half, Brighton really catch up, because City's passivity just allows them to get back into it. So it's really tough to judge where they're at, because they're in a scenario at the moment where they're still very, very good with the ball, of course. But the question is whether or not they're going to be able to control those moments when they lose the ball. And if they don't, then the chances that the opponents can generate are really big. And so, you know, we saw it against Fulham, we saw it against Bournemouth. it's a sort of the trade-off no longer becomes worth the trade-off, which before has got Pep Guardiola just dominating leagues. Now, because of the physical profiles being off and the player profiles being off, it's become unmanageable for City to play in these games. And so the Brighton game was really interesting from that point of view, because it felt as though the players were super aware of the fact that right now we're a goal up, we can become a bit more passive, we don't need to commit ourselves forward as much. But as a result, that passivity was equally problematic, and it allowed Brighton to get a foothold back in the game. So it's definitely a bit of a nightmare, I'd say, right now for Pep from a tactical point of view, because it's hard to know what the tactical solution here is, right? It seems like the solution can only be one which happens in January, and a different profile of holding midfielder being brought in to just take the burden off a little bit.
It's interesting as well. You look at the teams that City have faced, and you've mentioned Brighton there. We talked about Bournemouth. There was Fulham. The Fulham game, he consistently goes back to in his press conferences. He really wasn't happy with that performance. There's an element here that all of these teams that City have played have played really well at the same time. But then if the common theme is that the opposition keep playing well against you, there must be an issue with yourself as well there.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one as well, because I think in terms of the way that these opponents will be feeling, there's a real sense at the moment that City are gettable at. And I think that sort of momentum is allowing, because I think what often happens with City is that, you know, they dominate games, they score a goal, and then you're like, well, that's it, the game's over. And I think what teams are feeling now is, it's not over yet. There's always going to be a chance for us to generate in a couple of minutes enough, you know, attacking moments to actually turn this game around. That's what happened in the Brighton game, right? It was very close between the two goals. Yes, City were quite open at times, but they didn't concede until fairly close to the end. Two goals in quick succession, and then held on for the win. And I think that loss of the edge of, you know, the psychological edge of being able to be like, well, you know, you only beat City if you, you know, you score your two shots and they miss all of their chances. That's not the reality anymore for teams facing City. And it gives, I think, a bit more impetus for those teams. You know, your Bournemouths, your Brightons, teams who are going to work hard and they're going to accept that that you know, it's a long slog for them to beat a team like City. It just makes it so much easier for them as well. So yeah, it's one of those things that you have to fix quickly, because if you don't, you sort of lose the psychological edge that you've been building for the last decade.
Yeah. Just finally as well, John, because there's this common theme now with City as well, that you know, they have problems in the autumn, they solve them during the winter, and then by the end of the season, you know, everybody turns around and says it was inevitable, City were going to win the title. We've seen that cycle happen again and again and again. Now, I'm always loath to say that, because something has happened before, it will happen again. How much of the season's issues right now can you see similar in previous City seasons, or is this one different? Is this maybe the year where they could run out of road?
Yeah, I think this is different. I know that, you know, the standard narrative is always like, don't write off City because they start slow, they come back strong. But I think in previous seasons, the starting out slow and coming back strong is usually exacerbated by just moments of unluck. So as we talked about before, City dominating a game and then losing a couple because they don't finish their chances and their opponent finishes both of their shots. And generally speaking as well, I'd say that when City have taken time to get into rhythm, I can't really remember many situations where it's been because they've had a complete defensive drop-off. This feels like a problem that usually just isn't ever a problem. The sort of out of possession stuff is always background noise, really, for City. It's always like they're going to be one of the best defensive teams in the world, and we just don't ever really think about it. The big question is always going to be, do they have the solutions to be able to cause problems for opponents in possession? And sometimes, you know, it takes Pep a little while to find the solution, but those solutions are almost always in possession solutions. So yeah, I think this time around the solution that needs to occur is an out of possession solution, and I don't think it's particularly rocket science. You know, like, it's, if it's easy enough for me to identify these problems, it will be more than easy enough for almost anyone with any sort of analytic capacity at City to recognise what the problems are too. But I think the real issue is that the solution to those problems is probably going to be a personnel solution. And, you know, that means, one, you're sort of beholden to what's available in the transfer window, and I guess it becomes then almost like an off-pitch issue. Like, do we have the money to be able to move this around? Who are we gonna, you know, who are we gonna be moving out of the squad effectively if we bring someone else in at this point? And that's a very different problem, I'd say, from some of the problems that City have faced before. So, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating one. I'm struggling to see how City get out of this hole right now. I think they'll be better. I think that people think that they're worse than they are right now. But I also think that people think that they'll solve the problem in a manner that's easier than the actual solution is too. So I'm sort of in the middle space between they'll be there and thereabouts by the end of the season, but I just don't think that they'll be able to get enough of a head of steam like they do in previous seasons to actually be able to right the wrongs that have happened in the first part of the season.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Listen to it. Drink it in.
That was The Athletic's John McKenzie speaking to me about the problems that City are facing this year. Joe, does this blip feel a bit different this year compared to previous years?
Yeah, I think John kind of outlined it pretty well in what he was saying, in the fact that the ultimate problem with the results this season is that they aren't... In previous seasons when we've had this kind of run, the stats have kind of bore out that we have still been like the dominant normal Manchester City that we always are, and like the defensive mishaps going the other way usually is because they have one or two chances and they get pretty lucky and they score them. This season, it is very much not that. It is very much teams are kind of peppering us a little bit. We're having multiple instances where Edison's having to bail us out. We could have lost a couple of these games comfortably by more than we have, and obviously some of the wins that we've got earlier this season could have easily been draws or defeats. Like, we've had to pull, you know, late equaliser out against Arsenal, we've had to pull a late win out against Wolves, and I think ultimately the injury crisis is, you know, it's not, no fan of any other club likes to hear about other clubs complaining about injury crises, but like, we're at the point where we've got so few players actually available, and our rotation options, as you said to John in the interview, have been so restricted because of that. That this normal time of year, we'd be trying out a few different combinations. We'd be going through like, well, we can't, let's keep changing things until we land on the thing that works. And you can't do that when you have no one to change it to.
I keep seeing the criticism of Guardiola. He's not changing it up, and I'm like, yeah. With what?
There's things that I definitely like to see. I want us to return to the, personally, I want to see us return to the four centre backs at the back once they're all fit. But obviously, they've not been fit, which is why we've not been able to do that yet. Yeah, it just feels like at the moment it's difficult to see how this turns round in the same way that previous seasons have, particularly because we don't have a Ballon d'Or playing for us anymore. Yeah, a Ballon d'Or winner playing for us anymore, which is usually a pretty big factor as to why we're so good. And yeah, not having him, but also being in a situation where we're constantly having a bit of it's Pep roulette, except instead of Pep roulette, it's because of injuries rather than because of his own choice. So yeah, it's it does feel very different, and I'm not sure that we do turn it round and inevitably come out the better side this time.
The other question, Adam, is obviously Joe's mentioned it there, no Rodri this season. Like, that in itself, we've always said that in itself could be the deciding factor in a season anyway. So the fact that they're doing that without the options right now to change things up, if things aren't working properly right now, then if the reason is Rodri isn't there, then if everybody was fit, he'd just try something else. But he's not been able to do that.
Yes, it's a double-edged sword there. I'm comparing it to previous blips. I hark back to the time we lost Haaland and Alvarez was able to step in. You look at the season between Haaland and Aguero, we went false nine. So we've had those options, like you say, the big, massive Spanish roll of wallpaper that's papering over the cracks in Rodri is just evident now. And I think that shows how much of a loss is that there hasn't been a Fabian Delph to put in left back or a Zinchenko to bring into midfield, or he's tried Kovacic to kind of do that role, but you've got no chance. And talking about swords, you live by the sword and you die by the sword with Pep's choice to have a smaller squad. And now I think we've got away with it a few years because there has been some utility players in there that can fit into other places when your resources are low. it's all come at once and there's no other options now. And when the chicken's coming home to roost now, and I think it's probably caught up with us. That's not to say he's not a magician and that he might not come up with some goods soon, but he has to come up with them sooner rather than later, because
it's Tottenham and Spurs next. It's Spurs and Liverpool next.
Desi, you can play around with those games and just throw some kids in and see how it goes. So not worried at all.
Yeah. He made two subs at the weekend, Joe. Bernardo and De Bruyne came on for Gundogan and Savinho, both of them at 1-0. Afterwards, he said this.
Kyle is not ready for 90 minutes at all because few training sessions this season, all season so far. Four central defenders, they are not, anyone is there. Four are injured. And Rodri, the best player, is not there. Kevin De Bruyne is away from his best. Doku is injured. Jack is injured.
Was there any prospect of Mane or Nathan playing 8 minutes?
No. Otherwise, we would have played. See, having 10 days to recover, I would have played, but they were not ready. They are not ready. Manu said, yes, I felt so bad in the training session. I could not move properly. And against that team, I prefer fresh people.
There we go. And we want Kyle Walker to come off because he's not playing very well at the minute, but nobody can come on. We want Rico Lewis to come off and have some rest because, you know, he's desperate for it and nobody can come on. De Bruyne only plays the end of the game because that's all he's up to. You know, you've got Akanji can't come on to... Like, some people suggested if he's on the bench, he can come on and help Kovacic in the central midfield. Well, like Guardiola just said there, he can't. His hands are tied right now, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that. I don't think it's... I think particularly with the defence against Brighton, that was literally... I mean, when you looked... When everyone saw that in the lineup announcement, it was very much of, what on earth is this? Like, this is just a literally everyone who you have available is there. And it was very... And so obviously in that situation, it's very difficult to... No matter how well or badly people are playing, to actually, you know, to actually make any changes there. For me, it's the midfield where I get the most frustrated. De Bruyne coming on for Savio, and maybe Savio was just really tired and really knackered, but he was by far our most dangerous player at the moment that he took him off. And for him to then, I'm not suggesting this is the reason why we concede two goals, but he comes off and we immediately concede twice, and that's, you know, probably just the two aren't necessarily related. But it does feel like Brighton might have seen our most dangerous attacker go off and maybe thought, I know, we can probably commit a few men further forward now.
I mean, they were... I mean, I think the phrase I texted to Sam Lee... I didn't have any phone signal, so we didn't get this till after the game. Yeah. But it was at 1-0, I think I texted, we're playing with fire.
Yeah, it was very much... We were very much on the ropes at that point already anyway. And I think that giving Brighton even more impetus to sort of go for it was probably not the best thing in the world. For me, the strangest thing for me is just, where on earth is James McAtee? Like, what is the point of him being in the squad? Like, it doesn't make... We turned down some pretty serious offers for him in the summer, and Pep was very complimentary of him during the pre-season, which obviously is not exactly out of the ordinary for Pep before he ships him off and we never see him again. Yeah. But the fact that we've had such an injury crisis in midfield, and we've still not really seen him play any game of any importance, or certainly start any game. But he's not even just not starting them. He's not coming off the bench either. Mm. And it's really, really strange. And for me, it just screams that he's just nailed on to leave. If not in January, he's going in the summer. Like, unless there's some serious turnaround in his sort of game time or the way that he's used by Pep, we're just going to see the back of him. And obviously, that's not necessarily to say that he's got loads of options at his disposal and that McAtee is like one of, you know, I imagine in this kind of situation, Pep's probably not thinking, right, the 19-year-olds are the ones who are going to save me. But at the same time, you've kept him around as a first team player. You've talked about how he's one of the senior squad now. Treat him like one.
Yeah. Otherwise, if he is in the senior squad, he needs to play.
Yeah.
The other side of this, Adam, is, I mean, I was going to ask about McAtee anyway, but there's, you look at elsewhere on the bench there, and you've got Nico O'Reilly, Jacob Wright in there, who have only played a couple of minutes. Like, O'Reilly's played a little bit more than Wright, but they've played kind of not unimportant games, but the less important games of the season. They played at Spurs. The reaction was kind of like, they've done okay here. If you're absolutely desperate for some legs, maybe play the guys that have got a bit of legs. I know how much experience counts for Guardiola, but there is some legs on the bench there.
Yeah, and it's frustrating when I think City fans as a fan base, we want to see the younger players coming through, and that's something that's lazily levelled at us from external factors, saying you never bring kids through. The Foden case in question is the famous one where Pep was proved right. In this case, it's not about proving points now. Needing players. So it's a weird one. And going back to McAtee, there was a weird quote from Pep earlier in the season where he referred to McAtee as a squad player and that he wasn't near the first team, but he wasn't out of the squad. And there was a bit of confusion around that. I think that was like second week in or something. So it's just baffling when you've got a player who's played two seasons with Sheffield United, so he's cut his teeth. He's not as immature in terms of experience of Brighton or O'Reilly. And yet he can't get anywhere near it. Is he just there to make sure the standards in training are good? And this comes on the backdrop of Cole Palmer's quotes this week saying that he left City because he was looking at other teams in the England under 21, his colleagues in the England under 21 setup, and they were already playing in the Premier League. He's looking around that dressing room and thinking, I'm not going to get in here, so I've got to go to Chelsea. I think Sancho didn't have the appetite to kind of want to win that battle. And you just hope that McAtee is kind of thinking he is strong enough to kind of fancy that battle, and it comes good because he's a local lad. I always put far too much pressure and hope on local City fans and who come from the academy. I'm really romantic about that idea. So for McAtee not to be even getting a look, it's really disappointing. And me uneducated guess is that Pep's trying to prove a point, but I don't know what point it is, that because we can see how threadbare your squad is. You don't have to prove a point to say.
I don't even think it's that far. You know, I think it's as simple as, you know, we're in a crisis at the moment. We need players who have the experience of dealing with this. And he always can. The thinking always comes back round to, well, Gundogan's been there before, Kovacic has been there before. These players know what to do in a crisis.
It's just, I find that so strange, because if you've got like a, obviously the experience is very, very important, but if you've got an experienced guy who's got 25% left in the tank, how is that worse than a guy who's got, how is that better than a guy who's got 100% in the tank, just because he hasn't, who's played in the Premier League, as we've said, and just because he hasn't done it at Manchester City in the Premier League, and it's just he's done it in the situation of, obviously he was at Sheffield when they were at the top of the Championship, so he's used to top end of a league kind of situations. It's not just he's just not done it with City in the City squad,
and also the dogfight of a relegation battle as well.
Absolutely,
so
you're
earning some stripes there.
They did lose that relegation battle quite spectacularly.
So you've got the scars to prove it, and you know what not to do next time. So he was in the dogfight there, and it's weird that you'd rather have a knackered but experienced old head rather than a young, energetic young head.
I really thought, if not Sporting, I really thought Brighton was going to be the game where he might roll the dice on one of the youngsters, because especially with the legs that Brighton have got in their team, like, they're a team full of young players. It was never going to end well for that midfield, was it, really, at the end of the day?
And if he doesn't roll the dice then, when does he? Because like we alluded to before, we've got Spurs and Liverpool on the horizon, which we'll come up to. So when do you get the chance to practice with these kind of formations? It's not anytime soon.
FA Cup's in January. It's all right. It's coming soon, isn't it? Yeah.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
It's easy to focus on the defence in these few games, because there's been moments where City have let it slip. But you look at, certainly in the league, you look at the Bournemouth game, the Brighton game, last 10 minutes of the Bournemouth game, the first kind of 30, 35 of the Brighton game. Then you look at Sporting, the first half mainly. Spurs, after going 2-0 down, they've missed a lot of chances in this run. Where's the issue? Is it because they're finding it hard to create chances? They're not really taking chances. But at the same time, you look at those spells and you go, they could have been 3 or 4-0 up by the time they conceded the equaliser.
Yeah, am I allowed to, like, when I was fine that Julian Alvarez was going, am I allowed to revisit that and say I want him back now? Because my problem is, we'll come on to the chances in a second, but the fact that after Haaland, the next nearest goal scorer is on 3 goals and 2 of them are defenders.
There's so, 5 of them, isn't there?
Yeah. So
one of them is Matias Nunes, who didn't kick a ball until about a month ago. So
the spread of the goals is the concern, but back to the actual chances when we're not converting. Even, it's always daft when you slag Haaland off because he's the best goal scorer in the world, but
make it 2-0, mate. Come on.
Well, even for his first one, the one-on-one with the keeper was a shocking shot that he had to follow into the net. And
sorry, goalkeeping union card is now here. That's a great save.
I forgot where I was then, yeah. There's a pair of goalkeeping gloves on the wall here, if anyone can't see them. No one can see.
There's just three of us in the room.
We should... Well, film it. Anyway.
The Costel Pantilimon shirt on the wall.
The Richard Wright signed jersey is a lovely touch. He's got 15, 16 goals this season, but he's nowhere near as clinical. And I thought he could have done better with that first one he scored, so I'm never going to use that in any other context than talking about chances. So we need to create three or four chances to score one. Usually it's been the other way around in terms of conceding, where teams only need one chance. So is it the fact that the play isn't that fluid, so we're not getting into positions where he's running onto? Because there's no creativity behind him now. Rodri's not breaking up play and setting us off on a counter. So he's having to... We're getting half chances that it's not free-flowing, finishing at the end.
Here's a thought, Joe. Are they just knackered?
It could very much be that. I'm really
what I was trying to get to.
I think it's a bit of like... It's mentally draining, isn't it? Like, the amount of running and the amount of games that they've played recently, like, it's not... You aren't the calm, confident, relaxed football that you can be in the middle of a title run when you're winning games one after the other. You're being given a couple of weeks out here and there when Pep decides to rest you. You're very much in the midst of, you've got to go into training and then you're going straight into a game. And then 3 days later, you've had more training, you go into another game. Meanwhile, you know that you're probably not going to get benched or you're not going to get subbed off because there's no other option for you there. I mean, Haaland in particular is very much suffering from this. And this is why... You mentioned selling Alvarez there, not replacing that goal output is absolute. We've done it a few times now where we've obviously let Riyad Mahrez go out the door.
We worried at the time we got rid of Alvarez though.
Yeah,
Adams famously wasn't.
I was worried. I was worried in the sense that we had been given absolutely zero links with any kind of replacement, and I think that he was he got 32 combined goals and assists in that season. And I think to let that go and not even attempt to replace it is now obviously Savio was coming in and maybe the option, maybe the idea was that, you know, him coming in would be part of the never ending production line of chances that Haaland would ultimately be able to score at the end of it. But if you're expecting Haaland to start every single game, basically, with the exception of, you know, the odd one where you'll play, allegedly you'll play James McAtee as a false nine if he's not there, you know, that's not sustainable. And not even having, because we were linked with them. And the 11th hour, we looked with Kyogo, weren't we, from Celtic, who, for my money, would have been a fairly decent backup, just because it's a body who you can bring in, who can do the job of a striker. But
Do you know the funny thing about that?
Go on.
Is Guardiola said, no, we're all right. He was the one that pulled the plug on
it. Oh my God, there's so many things to say about that. Sometimes Guardiola needs to just be told, you're having him.
Here's the squad.
I'm sorry, but you might want 19 plays instead of 20 or 20 instead of 21, but you're having him and you'll be thankful when you've not got when Erling Haaland's playing on one leg in the middle of December. And I suspect we'll get to the middle of December and Haaland will have to sit out a couple of games because he's already, you know, he's away with Norway at the moment, which is just brilliant. And it's just what we all want. The tiredness is no doubt playing a factor, and it's not just physical fatigue, but that mental fatigue is precisely why you don't take those chances when you get them, because you go from just being like, no, this is fine, we're just going to score this, to, oh my God, if I miss this, then something's wrong. Oh my God, I can't come off like, it's all on me. Just that kind of mental fragility just comes in, and you can't really blame him.
Would you, I mean, they could use Savio and Savinho. It sounds like if they've got two players there, that could swap in.
I'm never going to call him anything but Savio. I've been Girona pilled.
Yeah, I just, you know, if they've got players there that they're not using, I mean, I've not seen hide and hair of this Savio yet this season. Quickly on Kovacic, Adam, because as easy as City were to play through against Brighton in the final kind of half hour or so, I did think it was his best game in a City shirt for a long time. And it's kind of like this juxtaposition of he had a good game, but at the same time City were really open and difficult to and easy to play through. Why is that at the minute? What do you make of where he is? Because he's said himself he's fine playing with the six, but he likes somebody beside him, and City don't give him that.
Yeah, I was hopeful that Gundogan could have been the foil for him in a kind of double pivot, but that it absolutely isn't going to work.
Double pivot, that's a flashback, isn't it? 2019,
we all loved that.
Very good. I've been a bit critical of Kovacic off the ball. I think he could have been stronger in the Sporting Lisbon game. And so then when he intercepted and set up Haaland's opening goal, I thought, oh,
fair play to the lad. Yeah.
It's that famous corner that we've turned that I was looking at. So everything was rosy. So his best game by a mile. But I think
if you turn, we've turned about four corners here in this show. But if you turn four corners, you end up exactly where you were, don't you?
There's the analogy for the show, really.
There is.
If you always do what you've always done. So Kovacic, he's not Rodri, and that's evident when the amount of ground that Rodri covers side to side, forward and back. You've got Kovacic who just exposes as a kind of a one-man midfield, and it's not his fault. His flaws are obvious. I'd rather he was in the team than out of it, so I'm not going to start, you know, sticking him on the bench because there's no one else to come in anyway. But I don't think he's the absolute issue. I just think
there just needs to be a bit more solidity there.
Yeah, it's grossly exposed in this current setup, and but it's so obvious. Like, I don't profess to be a tactical genius, anything far from it.
Yeah, I know you're saying, like, that Guardiola's not sitting there going, everything's fine. Yeah.
This is why this discussion is actually the most interesting, because it's almost unexplainable, and here we are with a microphone in our hand trying to explain it.
Well, I've actually got a theory about that, and that is that, you know, this is the best it could get. And what I mean by that is this is Guardiola having solved
this
the problems.
This is the solution.
This is the solution. This is him having solved the problems. There is no better solution than what is coming up right now. Because if he tried something else and it was worse, it would just be even more open than it is. This is as closed as it could possibly be without Rodri being there.
That's petrifying.
Sleep well.
I actually think we haven't really seen Bernardo play next to Kovacic an awful lot. Like, we've seen so many times we've played Bernardo, like, against Liverpool, for example, Klopp's Liverpool, Bernardo would be plonked, even Rodri, Bernardo would be put right next to him to do even more of the running so that even more ground is covered.
Yeah, we need legs.
And we've got Kovacic in midfield, who I actually think he's been comfortably our best midfielder this season, like comfortably, like, which probably says a lot about, which probably is more of an indictment on our midfield than necessarily the how mint Kovacic has been, but I think he's been really, like, he's much improved on last season. But we keep putting him next to someone who's got even less legs than him. And it's like, and when you consider what his, and you consider that mobility is maybe one of his flaws.
Sorry, I couldn't work out, because the word less springs off an alarm in my head.
Fewer or less.
But I'm trying to work out if legs as a concept
is a singular concept.
Is a countable noun, or if it's an uncountable noun. Because if it's uncountable, then
quiz.
It is less. But if the amount of legs he's got, because they're not his physical legs, because he's obviously, he has two, we can count them.
It's the metaphorical legs.
If that is uncountable, then it is less legs, not fewer legs. But less legs doesn't sound right in my head. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't.
I'm glad we got to the bottom of that.
Yeah,
that's all right.
I really derailed you there, but I'm sorry about that.
So we've basically put Kovacic next to someone who has even less/fewer legs than him. And I think that, you know, that when you're putting in someone in midfield who is in that position of the pitch, particularly, who for all of his qualities, and obviously the pass to Haaland is one of them, he can pick out a pass. He's very good at driving with the ball when he's on it. He knows how to weight his body and just turn a man. And he's been so good at that even since he was at Inter Milan. He's never lost that. For him to go but we all know that off the ball, he's not fast. He can't cover a lot of ground. And Bernardo Silva, for no matter what his sort of, I think he's been a bit invisible this season. He's been a bit kind of just, he's been a body on the pitch, and he hasn't really done much else really other than be that body. However, one of the things that he's always been very good at is just running. Like, he ends games with, like, the highest running stats out of pretty much anybody on the pitch whenever he's there. Obviously, that's probably a little bit more difficult to ask of him in this current situation where we've got very few midfielders to actually pick from. Like, it's basically one of him, Gundogan or Kovacic is sitting out every game because none of them are creative enough. So Foden's starting every game now that he's actually back in the fold. But I think if you're going to, particularly against Spurs and Liverpool, I just don't see a world where you can go into that with Kovacic and Gundogan and not play Bernardo next to one of Kovacic or Gundogan, because otherwise, we are the two of the most dynamic midfields in the league at the moment. Like, we're just going to get destroyed. We're going to get overrun. And it is a bit baffling to me that we aren't seeing the Kovacic Bernardo combination very much, because I think they started the season together, didn't they? Because obviously Gundogan hadn't come in at the point of the start of the season. It was those two, And I'm pretty sure Rico Lewis just kind of moved into midfield with somebody else. I'm really struggling to remember. I'm struggling to remember who now. But this was when we were choosing not to play Rodri. And obviously, since we've no longer got the choice not to play Rodri, we've suddenly become like a team that looks like it doesn't have Rodri, which is very strange.
Yeah. There is the potential for this to become 5 defeats in a row, 6 defeats in a row if the Liverpool game goes badly. So they might have a European game actually in between.
Yeah, Feyenoord.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really bad if it gets to 7. do you know when the last 5 in a row defeats were?
I'm too scared to look.
It's not actually that much further because City ended that 05-06 season with 1 win in 10, I think it was, and 9 defeats in the other games. So it was it's just a few weeks earlier than the 4 in a row, but it's still a while ago. That's not
going to make for us anywhere near as scary a stat when it gets to five.
So
you know the last one we did. Well,
just a couple of weeks before that.
Yeah.
Right. Well, without making this show all about me and everybody else here, Wednesday was my birthday. For years, that's fallen during the international break, meaning that City haven't been able to ruin it. But this season, they made it 4 defeats in a row on the same day that I was supposed to be out celebrating with a load of friends. A couple of years ago, it was a similar story with the defeat to Brentford. I've been hearing from some of the others on the Blue Moon podcast, the regulars, about the times when City have put a dampener on their birthday celebrations. It's twice in the last few years that City have spoilt my birthday celebrations. This year, I had to pick myself up for a night out after watching them lose 2-1 to Brighton, but their record around my birthday is patchy at best. Others on the podcast have similar experiences.
My 30th birthday was the actual day that Liverpool beat us 3-0. Away in the Champions League quarter-final.
That's KC. His party was a few days later on the night that City beat Spurs at Wembley in the league in 2018. But the football put a dampener on his actual 30th.
There was about 20-odd of us that were in the Red Lion in Withington. Seeing the team sheet, saw that Gundogan was on the right. Yeah, it was just had a bad feeling that it was going to be terrible. Obviously, everything went wrong. It was calamity after calamity that game. I think before half-time, everyone had sort of waved the game goodbye. Everyone was just like sort of kicking about, drinking Guinness, just being miserable together. So it wasn't too bad, I suppose, in the end. I think some people ended up leaving before the final whistle. But I've got an absolutely shocking record of watching games in the Red Line in Withington as well. So I shouldn't have gone there to watch it, to be perfectly honest with you.
That's one standout bad performance for a birthday. Sometimes the poor displays can run to several games, though. Kieran Murray says City's record on his birthday isn't great.
In 2010, my birthday, half-5 kick-off, 16th of January, and it was Mancini's first defeat. So that was a bit rubbish. It was also my birthday, the 2-0 in 2015, where Santi Cazorla showed up and really completely took control of the Etihad.
It doesn't even need to be on your birthday for City to ruin the night.
City have kind of ruined a surprise birthday party for me once. I think it was like the 28th or 29th of December. City were playing Leicester and we were in a bar back home called Quinn's and we were just settling down, pints were flowing, crack was really good and the game was about to kick off. Now, I never really wanted to go to Quinn's. I was going, why can't we just watch it in the Anchor? But my mates were like, no, we have to watch in Quinn's. The match was about to kick off and then all of a sudden, Connor, my mate, was like, right, we're going to the Anchor now. I have to meet my uncle. And I was like, fuck you, man. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. So I was proper digging my heels in, going, why could we not have left ages ago? Anyway, we arrived into the Anchor bar and the match was on the screen in the front bar and I was like, right, we're staying here. And he was like, no, it's on in the back. And I was like, it's not on in the back. What are you talking about? Can we not just sit? So he was basically having to physically drag me into this back bar. And then we opened the door and all of a sudden, surprise!
It was an inconvenient party date and quite a while before Kieran's actual birthday. He says he never understood why it was so early.
It was a joint birthday party for my mate Rory and me, who was also 30 this particular year. But Rory's birthday is even later than mine. His is like the 26th of January. So his wife, my friend Claire, had organised a joint birthday party a month before her birthdays and it interrupted the Leicester versus City game. And that finished 0-0, yes. So the audacity of City to draw 0-0 on my birthday really ruined it on me.
Now, you might think that having a summer birthday would remove the chances of City making it one to forget. Richard Burns had always thought that, but then 2020 happened.
City, during lockdown football, made it to the FA Cup semi-final, and by virtue of my birthday being in July, I've never had the opportunity for City to play in the FA Cup semi-final on my birthday. And I thought, it's definitely going to be the Saturday. I'm going to have like the one and only competitive game City will ever play on my birthday.
If you remember, City lost that game against Arsenal at Wembley, meaning that unless future schedules change, City will forever have a 100% losing record on Richard's birthday.
One of the things that stands chief in my mind is being on the podcast for the show preceding the semi-final. I think Arsenal were in quite bad form, and certainly David Luiz was in bad form. He'd had a shocker when City had played Arsenal in one of the lockdown games. And I made the comment that I was looking forward to David Luiz playing because it's always nice to have a clown at a birthday party. And I knew as soon as I'd said it that I'd said something really stupid. And of course, he went on to have a man of the match performance in a win for Arsenal.
With all that in mind, how did Richard take it on the day?
My wife, I think, paid for a takeaway. So I ate my Chinese and she's not a big football fan, so she sort of humoured watching it. And at the end of the game, she stayed silent for a couple of minutes. And then her only comment was, "You're staring at the TV like you think you might be able to change the result."
So a bad day for Burns, and having a summer birthday didn't mean that Dom Farrell escaped unscathed either. Although his story centres around a pre-season friendly, so it does seem like it shouldn't really count.
Myself and my now wife had lived abroad for a couple of years, and this was like my first birthday back in the UK. We had a new house. It was like, right, it was the first time chance to have a birthday party with everyone round our new gaff. You then end up with the football on. It's only a friendly. Friendlies don't matter. And I genuinely don't care about friendlies. But you end up watching City with like a load of mates who support other clubs and who you wouldn't normally go out your way to think, let's surround myself with people who aren't City fans to watch a City game. But because it was a friendly, it's kind of a perfect storm. It's all right to sort of laugh and take the piss when they let a goal in. But they then let in four in 20 minutes, by which point everyone's merriment was definitely irritating me.
Dom says he was about as annoyed as he could get about a pre-season game.
Not only did City ruin my birthday a little bit, not a lot, it was still a good day, but they definitely enhanced my birthday for all of the other guests at the party who thought it was really funny. Because I'm pretty sure, I'd have to check this, pretty sure Stuttgart nearly got relegated the year before as well and were like, crap.
So we've had stories of birthdays and birthday parties ruined by City, but what about birthday presents? We're going to finish with this. This is from this week's Patreon show. Richard's dad, Tony Burns, told us about his birthday present from 1974.
At the start of the 70s, there were things like people having the lights turned off, there were power cuts and so on. And by the time we got to 1974, the government at the time, the Edward Heath government, had introduced a three-day week. What it meant was that games that had actually been scheduled for the evening were actually moved to an afternoon kickoff. And one of the presents that I got, like one of the gifts off my parents, was a ticket to the game. But that ticket was when the game had been scheduled at its normal time. I actually did something that I only ever did once in my life. I actually skipped school.
Tony says his parents knew about it and approved of it, which is ultimately what saved his bacon.
My mum and dad said, you can go and, you know, write a note sort of thing. And at the end of the game, my metalwork teacher, Mr. Tranter, was there. He saw me and it was one of those, you know, you have that sort of knowing look, catch each other's eyes and you know you've been caught. Next day in school, at the start of the school day, my form teacher did clearly been informed by Tranter, and he called me out to the front of the class, reached for his leather strap, because that was commonplace in those days, and he said, who do you think you are? I'm not prepared to play second fiddle to Manchester City. He was about to strap me, but I flourished the note from my dad, which he had to read, and I didn't get strapped.
It just goes to show that whatever your age, City always have the power to spoil a party. While this weekend's game with Brighton was a bad one, it was, in all fairness, something that a lot of fans had seen coming and had been able to prepare for. For me, nothing will beat the silent car journey home from the Etihad as I gave three friends a lift from the ground to my own birthday party following the 2-1 defeat to Brentford in 2022.
I'm You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. Blue Moon Podcast.
Podcast. Do you want me to write
it down? Podcast.
Podcast, yeah, that's it.
Podcast.
That's the one.
I am. You want me to say I'm Dennis Law?
I'm Dennis Law. You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
Okay. All right. I'm Dennis Law, and you're listening to the Blue Man. Hang on. Do it again.
I'll try again.
Okay. I'm Dennis Law, and we're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. Enjoy it.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
So that was a look at when City have ruined some of our regulars' birthdays. As we've mentioned already, the three of us in the room have... it's our birthday week.
Yeah.
Adam, I got you to run the numbers. City are really bad in November, aren't they?
Shocking. Well, I'd like to say all the best people are born in November, so happy birthday to any listeners who are in November. Illustrate. So, yeah, for my birthday, we've not won. I'm 38 now. The last one 37 years ago on my birthday.
You were
so,
one.
Yeah, so I couldn't even enjoy that one. The most recent defeat on my birthday was a 3-1 defeat to Liverpool in 2019. And it's just, I look at fixtures now because I know we've never won in my lifetime on my birthday. I just think, well, there's that weekend ruined. And then Brighton added to it this weekend.
That was the, was it Fabinho, or Trent Alexander-Arnold basketball game, Claudio Bravo debacle at the other end. Yeah, that one.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, did you enjoy that? But how did you, this was that year where we knew it was going wrong for City, and I purposefully, for the sake of my own mental health, did not watch that game.
Wow.
I avoided it because I knew how it was going to go, and so I went, I'm not watching it.
I was of the thinking of it, it's my birthday and I'll party and I'll cry if I want to, so I knew that was coming.
My birthday, the 13th of November, they have won in my lifetime in this one. They beat Halifax 3-0 on a Friday night in the FA Cup first round, back when they played in the only time they've been that low to play in the first round in 98-99. The last one was, the last time they played on it was in 2010. They drew 0-0 with Birmingham, which was the day when Mancini got booed for taking Tevez off and bringing Gareth Barry on with about 10 minutes left. Because he was like, there's just no, we have no control of this game. And everyone went, but it's 0-0, go and get a goal. What are you taking the striker off
for? If Guardiola did that now, we'd all be like, I see what's going on.
I see what he's doing.
Masterclass.
See what he's doing. Joe, your birthday, Adam ran the numbers that, the 16th of November. The last win is not in your lifetime.
It's even further back than Adam's.
Yeah, it's 1985, Nottingham Forest 0, City 2. Before the formation of the Premier League, it was in the top tier Division 1. But they did. They have won on your birthday, at least. Just not in your lifetime. You've never got to see one.
I've never been able to enjoy it. No, I think as you mentioned on the feature piece, like the closest they've come to properly ruining my birthday was that Brentford one.
That was an awful car journey home.
Going to the World Cup off the back of that was fantastic. It was great. It was what we all wanted. But that's because obviously the 16th always falls in the international break. I never have to worry about whether they're going to play on my birthday or anything like that. I'm like, this is a nice sort of city-free zone, my birthday. But I can see here the last time we did play on my birthday was the 2008 Hull 2-2. Was that the infamous Phil Brown?
No, not quite. I tell you what, I don't know why I remember this. Robinho was captain that day.
Was it?
Yeah, no idea why.
Did
that was Mark Hughes, I think, going, we've got to keep him happy.
Stephen Ireland scored too.
Yeah.
Did Bullard score? And did he do the celebration?
That was at the Etihad.
Of course, isn't it? Yeah, of course, yeah. Well, I've got a complete wrong game in my head. But yeah, so that's... Yeah, I managed to be blissfully Manchester City free on my birthday, so...
I seem to remember... I mean, you might be able to help me out on this one, but I seem to remember Tal Ben-Haim gave a really short back pass to Joe Hart, and Joe Hart went off injured, trying to clear it, and Kasper Schmeichel came on.
So Joe Hart went off. I thought it was going to be like a career-ending injury. He played the next game. I was at that game. I was mortified because it looked a bad one.
That's how I feel. Anytime a footballer for Manchester City like comes off and it's his knee, now I'm like, right, there's his ACL gone. It's done. Goodbye career.
Do you remember De Bruyne at Watford? Not at Watford, at Palace.
Yeah.
And then played 2 days later, carried off on a stretcher.
Oh my God,
this is a bad one.
That was a horrible challenge.
Speaking of, do you remember David Silva at home to West Ham? Went off with a weird neck injury. Looked really bad. Played the next game.
No, I don't remember that either.
There's a whole show for this one.
But also,
top 10 injuries that weren't as bad as they looked at the time.
A very recent one, Savio against Spurs. Looked like looked like he was done for. He was looking at his ankle as if it was bent the wrong way and hanging on by an inch. And he started the next game. Just or he came off the bench anyway. Just like, all right, so it was fine.
Yeah, we'll do it. Us three will do it sometime in the next few weeks. And speaking of which, that's a nice little segue you've done there. Because I've discovered this week that you can now gift Patreon subscriptions. So if you'd like to buy anybody a subscription for the Patreon, whether it's friend, family member, that sort of thing, as a present, then go to patreon.com/bluemoonpodcast/gift for details. If you sign them up to the FA Cup tier, then they'll get nostalgia shows every Monday. We play clips of them at the end of each episode. Both Adam and Joe have done them regularly down the years. They're all timeless. We do them in the summer so that you can listen to them at any point. We do Heaven and Hell and all that sort of stuff. You've both been involved. They're good fun, aren't they?
Yeah, well, can't wait for top 10 injuries that weren't injuries. Come on, that's how niche we go with these things. That's everything's the covered.
Yeah. They're always good fun. I remember, I think the last one that I did was, my cult hero, I think it was, and I went for Negredo, which was always nice to reminisce on these random players that you'll... next one's Mangala, obviously. Yeah, that's the next one.
I think somebody's bagged that before. Of course, I think that's coming up.
Who wouldn't? Like, he's a hero.
Yeah, but that's the sort of thing we do. They're done all through the summer, as we say. They're not time dependent, so you can listen whenever you like. Head over to patreon.com/BlueMoonPodcast if you want to sign up for yourself, and if you want to give that as a present to somebody else, just add a /gift on the end of that website. All I'm saying as well is that Christmas is coming up, so if you're thinking for £20 you could get somebody a present, there you go. We're going to finish now with a few listener questions. Get in touch on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website bluemoonpodcast.com as well, and you can also get us on Blue Sky. A lot of people have moved from Twitter to Blue Sky right now, and we're not closing our accounts anywhere, but we are going to start posting over on Blue Sky. So if you want to follow the podcast on there, it will follow you back, because we're trying to build a bit of an audience on there that is engaged with the show. So we figured if you wanted to follow us unprompted, then we'll follow you straight back, because it shows that you are engaging with the show in the first instance. Get in touch with us on there. The same handle as everywhere else. Just search for at Blue Moon Podcast. And Contemplative Jesus has been in touch on Blue Sky. This was actually a question for Let Me Talk, but I forgot to put it in the running order when we did that. So I'm answering it here. I hope he listens to both, because if he doesn't, he's not going to get the answer to this. But he said, has Edison been the player of the season so far? Adam.
Yeah, it's not even close for me. There's a few games where the Fulham game springs to mind where they should have been out of sight. We alluded to a few games earlier. We gave examples of where the game could have really turned on a knife edge, and he's been the difference. So I don't like it when your goalkeeper's your best player. That used to be the case for us.
I do. I like that.
Well, we're in the goalkeeper's sanctum here. Yeah, but yeah, so. I think, not to downplay Edison, I know I'm in the goalkeepers' union here, so I need to behave myself, but I think it's an indictment of where we're at rather than him being a mate. He's been called upon, he's done his job, and he's the only one who can hold his head up high. Certainly after the Brighton game, I thought he was the only one who was still calm on the ball, he was still composed, because the Brighton game, it was when one went in, we just imploded, and we've not done that for years. There used to be a real issue, like when we played Liverpool, for example, and we usually say that Arsenal, when something goes bad for Arsenal, recently they've thrown the towel in.
And Champions League knockouts back in the day as well, wasn't it? You go 1-0 down, exactly. Suddenly it was 3-0, and you're like, what's going on here?
And he was the one who stopped that happening at Brighton. There was a few scary moments when the ball was played back, and he kept it ticking over. Obviously, we didn't get the result we wanted, but he was a class apart. Everyone else, I think that's been a common theme this season, so Edison for me.
Yeah, I think I actually think this is kind of... It's the reason why people thought that, we had the Ortega-Edison debate at the end of the season, didn't we? But that's because Ortega was mostly brought in to cup games where it was an unsettled defence, and so he had to do a lot of shot stopping. And so he always, and don't get me wrong, it's by far his strong, like with Ortega, it's by far his strongest thing is just that ability to just point blank shots are being peppered at him in the box and he can save them. However, I think now we're seeing what happens when you put Edison in that situation, and he's actually proving that he is a good goalkeeper. It's just that for the last however many seasons it's been, where people have been kind of like knocking his shot stopping, it's that he's been given one-on-ones to deal with. Like people have just been running free and just having. I think they're called
high value chances.
Yeah, high value chances things, where it's just where goalkeepers are not really expected to save them, but that's always been used as a knock on Edison. And I think now we're seeing the inverse of that happen, where he's actually being forced into being a goalkeeper effectively, and we're seeing that he is actually quite good at doing that.
Is there anyone else in the conversation
for player of the season so far? That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that actually. And I maybe should have done.
It's mad that Haaland has the goals to game ratio that he does, and I don't think he's anywhere near it. Like I think he's
been off the last few weeks, haven't they? That's the thing.
Rico Lewis had a really strong start, but has tailed off.
Looks tired. He's been exposed by the lack of legs in the rest of the squad now.
Other than that, I'm thinking maybe Kovacic, just because he's been like pretty of all the midfielders, he's been the most consistent in there. Mm. And I don't necessarily think that the reasons why he's not looked great have been his fault, really.
Kyle Walker?
Oh, my God.
Just wanted to see your reaction. He's struggled a bit this season, hasn't he? Simon's been in touch on the emails to say Gary Lineker is leaving Match of the Day. This could lead to a shake-up of the punditry team. Do you think City still suffer from a lack of ex-City voices on TV? Micah Richards isn't very pro-City when he's on. Nader Manua isn't on that often. And the likes of Dunn and Lescott are only on TNT. Is there anyone out there who could become a Match of the Day regular that sees City positively? Anyone you think could be the flag bearer for City, Joe?
I actually think Joe Hart has been quite good when he's been on there recently.
He has, hasn't he? Goalkeeper.
Yeah,
there we go.
Goalkeepers Union. There we go. Yeah, he's been really good. Like I think when you see, so I think there's a stark difference between how Joe Hart is on punditry and the likes of Lescott and Dunn. Lescott and Dunn to me feel like they've been brought on because we need a City guy. Let's get them
doesn't,
in.
Doesn't really feel like they want to do it, does it?
No, it's just like they're just there and they don't. And I think anybody who watched Manchester City's stream of the Ballon d'Or. The Ballon d'Or thing and heard Lescott talk about the football outside of Manchester City, probably got an idea of how much research he actually does of this stuff. It's not an awful lot. But Joe Hart, when he was on Match of the Day recently, I watched it not that long ago, and you could tell that he's been putting so much effort into learning everything so that he doesn't come across as a bit of an idiot, basically. Yeah. I don't know necessarily if he was particularly pro-City in a way that anyone else was. I think you kind of, when it comes to Match of the Day, you don't really get the pro or anti-City side of things because it's all quite, they only have like a couple of minutes to talk about the games between. It's all very sort of like matter-of-fact analytical. You don't really get the bias. Obviously, you have a bit of like banter between Ian Wright and Alan Shearer, which usually just shows that, I'm an Arsenal fan. Oh, he's a Newcastle fan.
But you all have no hair. That's another one. That Match of the Day, like the no hair guy.
Yeah, yeah. Alan Shearer's never won the FA Cup. Do you know that? I think you only really get that sort of bias, quote unquote, side of things when it comes to like Sky, when you've got like, you know, Carragher and Neville might as well just be wearing United and Liverpool shirts in there, which is fine if that's the direction they want to go in. But I'd like to see, Richard's not being very pro-City on there is a bit of a shame. Nadum's always great, wherever he is. But it's like you say,
he always says to me, you know, he keeps his cards very close to his chest about the punditry work he does, and it's very much, go on then, I'll do that. Okay, maybe I don't fancy that one.
Yeah. I think he'd be great if he was willing to do it more often than he does. But if Joe Hart becomes a bit more of a sort of regular on these things, and I think he could be, he could be very good.
Yeah, you're disappointed in Richards a bit, Adam, because he's been, certainly when you watch him on Sky, you don't get the kind of chest-thumping City praise you get with from United with Neville and with Liverpool with Carragher.
Yeah, I think he's forging a career away from City and, you know, broadening his horizons. I think that's quite evident. I think the other two aren't bothered about that.
He also isn't a City fan.
He's an Arsenal fan, isn't he? Which is when he's been commenting on a City v Arsenal title race in the last 3 or 4 years has probably informed some of his. I think he seems like he comes across as quite aware, and I think Steve McInerney did a video with him once where he did sort of interview him and ask him about his punditry and stuff like that, and I think he admitted as much as that he doesn't want to be known as the City guy.
He
wants to be taken quite seriously as someone who isn't just like we all know Neville and Carragher are the United and Liverpool guys. Like they are so. They'll call out things that the club do wrong, but it's just so obvious that they're just there because of the clubs they support and stuff like that. And I think Richards is quite keen to not be that guy.
Be a bit more neutral. Yeah.
I'd like to see Mario Balotelli represent us. I think he'd do a good job.
Did he do the Champions League final?
Did he just turn up? He has represented us.
He was there, yeah.
I was trying to be funny, but that's actually live imitating art or the other way around.
Did he just turn up there, or was he booked by TNT?
I think it must have been
TNT.
He was there for the entire punditry, I'm sure. Yeah. He was there the beginning, half time, full time. That's hilarious because
I was trying to do a gag and it's actually happened.
I was too nervous to pay attention to what anybody else was saying. So
I don't know if this got spoken about last week, but can we talk about how a travesty it was that Noel Gallagher was on co-coms for the Sporting game. Like, why is...
I fear that's going to become the norm.
I know. I don't want the celebrity endorsement co-commentary.
I caught up on the Sporting game because I usually play football on Tuesday nights, and so I played football and was like, I'll avoid the result. Me and Sam Lee have had this whole thing about whether you should avoid result, and I avoided the result. I got all the way home. Radio in the car was on Six Music, so I didn't turn it on and accidentally get a spoiler and notifications off on the phone, everything. And then I sat down, hit play, realised that Noel Gallagher was on co-coms, and my heart sank. And then my phone rang, and it was Five Live. And I thought, it'd be something to do with work, this. So I paused the telly and answered it. And they said, "Hi, David, any chance we get you on to comment on the 4-1 loss tonight?" I was like, oh, man. I've done so well avoiding this result, and then here we are. You just spoiled it for me. Brilliant. So I whizzed through it then, so I didn't really get the full effect of Noel Gallagher on co-commentary. Final question for this week comes from Steve on Blue Sky. He says, which player were you most excited about signing for City but left you so disappointed? We already know Joe's answer. He's mentioned it a couple of times already. If he doesn't say Mangala, then you know something's wrong here. Adam, I'm going to let you go first.
He had so much potential on Football Manager.
I'm going to don my tin hat here and say Ilkay Gundogan Part 2.
Oh, okay. I understand it.
Now,
it hasn't worked out yet,
so I'm hopeful. But and this will be in the end of the season look back when we kind of renege on our opinions. I was so happy when Gundogan came back.
Agreed.
It lifted the place. It was what we needed. It was extra legs in the midfield, which proved needed, and just it's not there, is it?
Struggling, isn't he?
And absolutely gutted, because I think I'm comparing it to the excitement of the move. So I'm judging him on the hype of the return and not necessarily an aging Gundogan who's just come back. It was the timing of it, the pomp and ceremony of it, and the performance hasn't matched that. So if we'd have signed him from another club and he'd never played for it, we'd probably give him more time to get into things.
He'd need a first year, wouldn't he? Yeah, but he doesn't need a first year. Yeah, ninth,
exactly,
eighth?
With a sabbatical. So that's the first one that springs to mind. But Joe can have a serious answer.
It's a bit of a shame on that, really, isn't it? Because obviously we signed him to be like a guy we could bring off the bench when things are going pretty well, and just like, you know, so calm a game down when it gets to the end.
Play, Ilkay, play again.
Yeah,
play
now,
again.
Now it's like, oh, you're not tired enough. It's like you're going to do it. It's like, yeah. So I think, yeah, it's a shame. I'd love for us to all look back at the end of the season and be like, oh, it's great. But what scares me most about the Gundogan signing is that I don't think we'd have signed a midfielder if we didn't get Gundogan. Mm. If he didn't become available on the free, we just wouldn't have signed anyone. We'd have literally no one in midfield at the moment. In terms of players I was most excited for signing, but left this point,
It's Mangala, isn't it?
It's got to be a little bit of Mangala, hasn't it? I think the other one was probably Claudio Bravo, because I think that when he came in, he'd come off of doing really well with Barcelona, and it felt like the Joe Hart's going out the door, which really hurt at the time. Mm. But it felt like this is like, right, we're bringing in the Pep thing now. It's going to be great. It's like he's just done. I've only seen this guy in the Champions League, and he's been great in the Champions League. Like, this is going to be so good. And then but that whole season happened, didn't it, really? And
it's the only goalkeeper I've ever seen come off his line and make the angle bigger. I don't know how that works.
I think someone...
Physically impossible.
I remember, and you'll probably know more about this than me, but I remember seeing like analysis of him at the time saying that he stands like a handball keeper, where his hands are always low, as if like he's got a... You know, like the five-a-side nets that actually only go up to about your waist.
Yeah.
It's like he's always trying to sort of defend those, and it's like, you do know there's like the other like couple of... Like,
the other two-thirds of the goal.
There's the other 4 feet above that, though, you got to worry about. But I think, yeah, he was exciting more for the incoming of the new era.
What he represented. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think him conceding pretty much every shot on target against him probably killed that a little bit.
Yeah, saved his legacy, though, with a few penalty saves in shootouts. Yeah. And thankfully, finally, ESPN have finally taken this column offline. It doesn't exist anymore. But it was in the 2014-15 season, at the end of the January transfer window, I wrote that Wilfred Bonny was the player that would tip City into winning the title that year.
How did I forget Wilfred Bonny?
Yeah. He was fantastic for Swansea. He should have been brilliant for City.
He was the missing
He was
absolute shite.
He was missing piece. I was fully with you. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, this guy is going to be he's the answer to the Dzeko problem. Yep. He's going to be everything. And yeah, oh, such a shame that it didn't work out for him. He basically just got malaria and got.
He got malaria, then it didn't work out. Yeah. I mean, which in fairness, in terms of an excuse,
it's pretty good.
It's quite
there,
a good
yeah.
one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks also to my guests, especially for coming over to my house on a Thursday evening. So thank you very much, Joe Butterfield.
Thank you very much.
And Adam Carter.
Always a pleasure.
There is a clip of this week's Nostalgia Show on the way. That's Tony Burns talking us through his 5 picks for his games that made me. You can get the full thing on our Patreon. Take a look at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. It's the international break now, so at least City can't have lost again by the next time we're back on with another podcast. However, it is Spurs coming up next, and who knows what will happen when the movable object is hit by the stoppable force. We'll preview that one on next week's show. Join us then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
My younger brother, Paul, had been living and working in Japan for 9 years. He'd left his job and he decided to head home. No timetable, no plan, just sort of globally wandering home. I'd sent him a message, Paul. I've got tickets for Wembley. If you pick this message up, phone me. He phoned me on the Wednesday before the game, and it turned out he was in South Africa planning to head to Argentina. He actually said, fuck it, Argentina will always be there. We might never be at Wembley again. Went to the game, and actually just linking into the piece of jewellery, I was wearing a Tag Heuer watch. And at the moment that the Dickhoff goal went in the absolute frenzy and everything, my watch came off. And it stopped at the exact time that Dickhoff had scored. And that watch still, it hangs up in the garage, actually. I've never had it repaired and never will. And then he then headed directly back to Heathrow and then went on to Buenos Aires to continue his sort of wander home. When he got back to Johannesburg, at the baggage carousel, there was a Gillingham fan. So Paul said he just whistled Blue Moon and laughed.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.